Ons vir jou, wat nou? Where the manna will discuss and cover all relevant topics and questions you might have on areas such as paspoorte, international rules and retirement, as well as internationale gesprekke with SAFA besigheidseienaars and restaurante abroad. Welcome to Season 3, Bits and Bobs.
Welcome to yet another episode of Ons Vir Jou Wat Nou, the podcast, and it's Season 3, Bits and Bobs, Episode 6, and I'm very fortunate to sit around the microphone with Danel Labuschagne today. Danel, hello and welcome. Thank you for your time.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for inviting me. It's a pleasure to join.
Yeah, awesome. I'm really excited. It's a hot topic at the moment that we're going to discuss, and it comes down to financial immigration, but we wanted to hear your side of the story, if I can put it that way, and the type of services that you offer. Can you tell us a little bit? You know, I met you through the contacts of FFG Global, C.S. Smith and Michael Bell and all of those guys. How did you meet them? So you're basically working as a tax consultant with FFG. Can you give us a little bit of background on what you do and how it came about that you are working with FFG?
Yes, thank you. So I am a tax consultant and a registered tax practitioner with the South African Revenue Services. I also have my master's in South African and international taxation. And I also met Sia a couple of months ago, and we started talking, and the hot topic of financial immigration took place. And because the whole process is now governed through SASH, I told him that's really a place of specialization on my side, and we started to work together, yes.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, so C.S. Smith, he's the MD, a good friend of mine as well. He's the MD of FFG Garden Route, and yeah, so he's also, you know, he's also very heavily involved in FFG Global, and I saw the last few years, you know, I myself and him, we had a few conversations, and they are, or FFG is really gearing up to assist clients and future clients with any global questions that might arise, and one of those questions are definitely financial immigration. Can you in a few words just describe what financial immigration is, because, or emigration is, because there's sometimes a bit of a misconception on, you know, the difference between financial immigration and immigration itself, you know, the residency part and actually the tax residency part. But then also there's also many other misconceptions on whether it's applicable for certain people and or whether it's not. So I know it's a loaded question, but let's just maybe start with, what is financial immigration?
So, just on the point of immigration, immigration is, of course, if you decide to leave South Africa and go to another country. And even if you cease your citizenship in South Africa, your tax residency status still remains. So financial immigration has been recognized by SASH as the formal process of seizing your tax residency in South Africa, should one have the intention not to return to South Africa and residing abroad. So by financially immigrating, you're not physically cutting your ties with SASH totally. It depends on if you are still earning South African sourced income, such as interest income, or if you have a residential property you're renting out and you're earning that type of income in South Africa, you still have to submit the South African sourced income to SASH. But if not, you don't have to submit a return at all going forward.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting. So, coming back to the loaded question that I had is, and I want to unpack a second part, and that is where certain people, you know, where they might start living abroad. Take my wife and myself for as an example, and after 3 or 4 years, we've been living abroad. We've been paying taxes in a different country. There's this misconception that I do not have to do a tax return back in South Africa. SARS do not even know about me. You know, is that a misconception? Is it something that somebody can just shrug off and kind of forget about? Or could there potentially be consequences for somebody in the future if they do not follow the correct procedures?
Yeah, so that's a big misconception, and that's also one that came across my attention a few months ago. So what people do when they go abroad and they live there for a couple of years, they submit returns in South Africa as zero returns. And that's not correct, because even if you immigrated, you didn't cease your tax residency in South Africa. And because you're still a tax resident in South Africa, you are getting taxed on your worldwide income, and you have to declare your worldwide income. That will also include your salary that's earned overseas, and any type of foreign investment income has to be declared. So if those returns weren't filed as such, you are non-compliant, and there will be repercussions in the form of penalties and interest. And also, just there is a system underway where global information are shared with SASH, and very soon SASH will be receiving your financial information from right over the world, from all the financial institutions, and then I assume they will start cross-referencing the information with the returns submitted to SASH.
That's a scary thought. You know, I've had this discussion a few times, and that's really a scary thought of, you know, them getting the global information, global financial information, and if they can start cross-referencing. So, but on that, you mentioned, or while you were talking, I wrote down tax treaties, because that's the question. That's maybe where part of the misconception comes in, is that if you do immigrate then from South Africa and you sit in a country that South Africa's got a tax treaty with, that's the second part of the misconception, is that I hear quite often, is that, yeah, but it's fine. We are in a country with a tax treaty with South Africa. But as far as I'm aware, you still, even though you have there's a tax treaty maybe between the two countries, you still have to, you know, declare your worldwide income. Do I have that correct?
Yes, you're correct on that. So whether a double tax agreement applies between South Africa and the country you're residing in is very important, because all a double tax agreement does is it prevents you from being taxed twice. So it doesn't prevent you from submitting those information to SASH still. You still have to submit all the relevant income you received. And then on the double tax agreement, they will be deductions on your income tax return, but you have to still submit all the information to SASH.
Okay, now that makes sense. But then also that double tax agreement, or as I call it, tax treaty, I'm not sure, I think that's wrong, but the 1.25 million threshold, that's a number that was recently agreed with, I believe, SASH, that anything below that, that falls under that double tax agreement, but anything above that, am I correct if I say that, if I'm assuming that anything above that does then not get covered by the double tax agreement, or what is that threshold there for?
So that 1.25 million is specifically for expats working outside South Africa, but still being South African taxpayers. So if you have a foreign employment, it's very important to first determine if you have your own business or if you are formally employed by an employer overseas. If that's the case, and there's a few other requirements as well regarding days and continuous days. If you meet all those requirements, you are able to get a 1.25 million rand deduction or exemption from your foreign income. And then the double tax agreement will apply on anything above the 1.25 million. So the 1.25 million is a South African tax exemption. And then if there's a double tax agreement between South Africa and the other country, you will have a look at that determinations in the double tax agreement for anything above the 1.25.
Okay. Now I understand it better. But then this is the question as well. So the currency, you know, it fluctuates quite often and it's quite volatile, the South African rand. So I don't know if you know this answer, but when do they actually measure this? Because 1.25 could be drastically different in February compared to, say, in say August. So when do they actually measure it? Is it at the end of the financial year? Is it, or when do they use the exchange rate? Because, you know, I assume there's going to be few people on one currency that's going to go above the 1.25, and then on a different currency rate or exchange rate that will just fall under the 1.25 million.
Yes, that's a good question. So what we usually do, and it's a more accurate way, is in the month ending, last day of the month, that rate for that month's income is used to convert the income. So if you have 12 months incomes, there will be 12 months conversions as well.
Okay. All right. Okay. Now that makes sense. That makes it more fair. Yeah. Otherwise, it can potentially be a little bit unfair, or it can potentially even swing in your favor if you use one specific month. So tell me, I've got a friend and a little shout out to him because he's a big fan of the show as well. And it's Olden Budafane. He sits in Kenya, and he worked in Zambia as well. So if a question from my end, so if he's going to be working in Africa, let's say for 3 years, and his intention is to move back to South Africa somewhere in the future, let's say we rewind, that it's the day before he actually moves abroad, and his intention is to go and work and be there for a few years in Africa. He potentially earns some dollars there, but his intention is to go back to South Africa. What, you know, from your side as a tax consultant and an expert in your field, what would your advice, or on this show we don't share any advice, but what would your opinion be on what he should do for the three years ahead? Should a person like that consider financial immigration, and then once he returns, he then financially immigrates again to become tax liable again in South Africa, or, you know, are there other options?
So it's very important to note that financial immigration, you have to do an ordinarily resident test. And by saying that, you have to determine where you will ordinarily reside. And that will be then South Africa. So if his intention is to come back to South Africa, his intention is not to stay overseas, he will not be able to meet those specifications from SARS to say, okay, he is a non-resident. And also, it must be noted that when you financially immigrate, there is CGT implications. So what that means, if you financially immigrate and you have South African and international assets at that stage, there's a deemed disposal based on the market value of those assets, and you will have to pay CGT on those assets. So if his intention is to come back to South Africa, I will not advise, if I can use that word, for him to financially immigrate, because he is going to return. And should SARS then note that his intention was never to stay overseas, there might be tax implications as well.
Okay, that's really interesting. So that order, it's a big word for me, ordinarily residency test, I know I screwed it up, but doesn't matter. How does that work? Is it, I know in the past, you know, all these cricket players and rugby players, and they would stay outside of the country for more than 183 or 85 days, whatever that test was, and they could potentially be exempt from paying tax in, you know, the income that they then made abroad. Stop me if I'm wrong, but now how does it work these days? Because I've heard that it has changed a little bit. So honestly, I think it's now moved to a 5-year process where it's a total of nearly 900 days or something over 5 years. Is that correct? And is that taken into account for the residency test, or is it only an intention?
No. So just to go back to the 183 days, that is also pertaining to that exemption for the foreign income, the 1.25 million. So previously it was totally exempted if you were out of South Africa for 183 days, 60 days continuously, and then you could apply for that exemption. But now it's just the 1.25 million. But so there are two tests. The first one is, are you ordinarily resident in South Africa? And the test conducted there is SARS looks at where your main place of residence is. So where is your family? Where is your wife and your children? Do you have property overseas? Or do you have a fixed contract for longer than 3 years? What type of visa do you have? There's a lot of tick boxes that you can tick, and all those information you will need to submit to SARS. So that's the first test. But the second test is the physical presence test. And the physical presence test may deem a person who is not ordinarily resident in South Africa to be a resident if he's present in South Africa for more than 91 days in a specific tax year, as well as 91 days in the previous five tax years, and more than 915 days in aggregate in those 5 years. So if you are out of South Africa for a few years and you're ordinary resident, you fulfill the obligation of the ordinary resident test, and then you are South African resident, but the physical presence tests come in after that. So that's the second test.
Okay. So I'm busy with these type of things because I find it really interesting. But as you could hear from my question, I've mixed up a lot of I've touched on a few things that is potentially accurate, but I've mixed it up completely. But now, a question kind of just sidestepping or into a specific situation as well. Recently, there was a pandemic worldwide, and you know, COVID made it possible for people to either work remote or work from home. And there were a number of people that I know of that were fortunate enough to travel back to South Africa, live and stay there for a few months, you know, live under Oma and Opa's roof or even your mom and dad or whatever. And you could potentially have overstayed that 90 days. You mentioned 90 days in for the physical present test. Is there maybe an exemption for during the COVID period, or does it still apply for that time?
And so just on that, it also states that you have to be more than 915 days in South Africa during the previous and the preceding 5 years. So I don't think that will reach those number of days. But there are a couple of statements issued by a few tax consultants where they investigated that. And I'm sure we will be able to tell SARS that the intention was that they have to go back, because none of them could potentially go back. They were prohibited to go back. So the intention was to go back. You will have to analyze each one's situation and explain to SARS the whole reasoning of them still being not ordinary resident.
Okay, yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, because that's also come up quite a lot between, you know, if you got caught up in some of those lockdowns, you were potentially there for a few months extra than what you planned. Mm-hmm. I know a friend, another shout out, if you don't mind, is Richard van Rooy. He went over with summer clothes, and eventually it became winter in South Africa. So he stayed there for a few months. I think he enjoyed it over there, but there was at some point he wanted to come back, but he couldn't actually due to the lockdown. So you can't just, and it was a whole process then to get to the airport and or book your flights, get to the airport, get tested again, and then eventually fly back. So I believe, you're quite correct there. The intention is definitely something to look at. If I go into a little bit more detail, or let me put it to you this way, I want to jump over, take a little break, do a SAFA index where we're going to compare. Today, we're going to compare the max income tax rates of the countries that we normally look at. But once I come back, I just want to finish up with a few last questions. And, you know, I want you to be able to share your contact details, where I believe there's a lot of people listening to the show that drastically want to and urgently want to get in contact with somebody like yourself, a specialist in the field, to make sure that they tick all the boxes so that SARS do not look into their come knocking on their door in the future. But let's get into the SAFA index.
Welcome to the SAFA index.
So for today, the SAFA index is the max income tax rate in the countries that we normally look at. So it's the USA, it's Canada, UK, Netherlands, the UAE, Australia, New Zealand, and then obviously South Africa. And these rates are applicable, or were applicable, in December 2022. So it might have changed. A lot of these countries do switch from financial year as well in January. So on the 31st of December, like the Netherlands. Other countries are different. New Zealand's only somewhere in June, I believe, 30th of June. And South Africa is the end of Feb, so it's either 28th Feb or 29th Feb, going into March, the new financial year will start. But this is applicable. These rates were applicable in December 2022. So South Africa, the max income rate, and if I have it wrong, Danel, just jump in, it's 45%. The USA sits at 37, Canada 33, that's nice and low. And New Zealand sits at a maximum tax, the top bracket is 39%, Australia 45%. The UK sits at 45% as well. The Netherlands a whopping 49.5%. I do feel it. However, I'm still on a 30% ruling for another year or so. And then for the friends then, the UAE, I know this might change very soon, but as of December 2022, your income rate, your max income rate was still nice, 0%. So Danel, listening to these percentages, I mean, South Africa at 45%, that's relatively high for, with all due respect, a country that's got certain things as a first world country and other things, you know, that's potentially third world compared to some of the other countries that we look at. Is that 45% accurate? Do you know it off by hand?
Yes, that's correct. And you're 100% correct in saying that it's quite high, especially because we have to pay for everything else as well. Nothing is included in that 45%.
It's very true. I saw when I did some research for this, Finland sits at nearly 57%. But if you consider what you get in Finland, yeah, we traveled Denmark also last year, also a Scandinavian country. The things that that they get there, even here in the Netherlands, for your tax that you pay, what you get in return is, yeah, it's really fantastic. And then if you consider what you get in South Africa for the 45%, it is unfortunate. I mean, you just have to look at things like load shedding that's going on. Yeah. However, in the UK and the Netherlands, there's also talks of constraint on the energy network, and especially the electricity network. Funny enough, so we might even see blackouts, as they call it over here, in the future in countries like the Netherlands. You never know. But just to get back into the subject of what we're discussing, financial immigration. I wanted to ask you, so if somebody approaches you, what are the main things that you want from them, main information? Like, obviously, it's ID number, passport number, name, surname. But what other things would you want to receive from a potential client if they're already sitting abroad to be able to do the best possible assessment on whether they can apply for financial immigration or not?
So I also think another thing that's important is just for us to calculate their possible CGT implications. So what we usually send them is a list of assets they have in South Africa and abroad. And then when they complete it, we do the calculation and send it back to them, because it can be intensive CGT if they have big assets overseas as well. And then we'll also need, for example, the type of visa they currently have overseas, the contract, what type of contract do they have with the employer, the period of the contract, as well as are they married? Because it's very important to note that if you want to financially immigrate, your spouse also has to do that. Otherwise, it doesn't get approved by SAS, because you and your spouse both have to financially immigrate in order to be ordinary non-resident. And also other things like, did you buy a property overseas, the property details, do you have children that was born overseas, just general information to show that you are making a living overseas and intending to stay there.
Okay, yeah, it's quite. I forgot about a number of these things again, because, just for the listener out there, Danel also helped myself and Laverne with this whole process, or we are in the process of finalizing it, if I can put it that way. So the thing that caught my ear there is the fact that if you are married, I've heard contradictive information about that. Is that, let's say, if one person works somewhere in Africa, and the other person still lives in South Africa, but they are married, so that person can't financially immigrate. Is that what you are saying?
Yes, that's according to what we advise on, and that's also the responses we received from SAS. Because in order to make a living and residing abroad, you are deemed to take your spouse with you. And if your spouse still stays in South Africa, you will be deemed to will return to South Africa one day.
Okay, that maybe speaks to that what you mentioned, the intention. Yes. What is the intention? And then also that the physical, what did you call it? Present test.
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense. And then just the last question from my end. Normally, if you know from day one that you get in contact with a client, how long does the whole process normally takes until SARS then issues that PIN, if I can call it? I think it's called a PIN that then you know that you are then officially financially immigrated or whatever that is. How long does the whole process take?
So it depends on how many times SARS comes back and asks for additional information. So we usually say between 4 and 6 months for it to be completed.
Okay, 4 and 6 months. It's not that long at all. You know, considering all the information that you need to kind of gather and then you know compile in a digestible way for SARS for them to actually use that to either declare or yeah, for this whole process to be successful, if I can put it that way. But then, and just the last misconception, I think a lot of clients out there, they think they contact a tax consultant or a tax specialist and somebody that then also obviously specializes in financial immigration. And they think that that person, like yourself, will do everything. I think that is maybe just something for somebody out there is that remember that you still need to provide all this information. Somebody like Danelle will make your life a lot easier and you won't actually be part of the process itself. So that is what you pay for, is to make sure that it gets done in the correct way and that there's that you don't sit with any trouble in the future. But just note that you need to have all your information in place, that you need to have all of these things maybe in place. So I would say before contacting Danelle, and we're going to share your details just now, Danelle, is to start looking at a few things. Start looking at, okay, can I get the information of my work contract, my visa, the period of my contract? I can get my full marriage certificate ready and all of these things, and maybe get information on the property that you potentially have bought overseas already or any other assets that you have in South Africa. Where you're going to then, what is that deemed disposal that you mentioned?
Deemed disposal, yes. So just on that part, you get taxed on all the assets in South Africa and abroad, except on the fixed properties you still have in South Africa. So as that remains in South Africa, it will still be deemed as a South African source of income, and you won't get taxed on that, but on all other assets, you will get taxed on.
Okay, as they would kind of do a deemed as if you were to sell it today, pay capital gains, and then move on.
That's exactly right, because it prevents tax avoidance, and because you move out of the South African net, they won't get that CGT in the future. So you will have to be deemed to dispose it at date of immigration.
Okay, no, that makes sense. And the fixed property, once you sell it in the future, then you'll pay your capital gains at that point. But then obviously, this is actually irrelevant, because once you move abroad, that doesn't become your primary residence anymore. So let's say if you lived in a house in Pretoria somewhere and that was your primary residence, and now you've moved to New Zealand and you start renting out the property in South Africa and you sell it 5 years later, then you'll pay your capital gains tax 5 years later, I assume.
That's correct, yes. And just on that, Edwin, if I can just come in there, it's very important to also note that we can backdate your financial immigration process if you till the date where you ceased to be a South African resident. And there's two main reasons for doing that. So the first is if you submitted all your returns as zero returns and you didn't declare all your worldwide income. We previously mentioned that you are non-compliant, but by backdating the financial immigration date, you will not have to reopen those returns. So it will be deemed that you did not earn South African income. You aren't getting taxed on worldwide income anymore because you weren't South African resident from the backdated date. And the second thing is, because I just mentioned you will have to pay CGT on your South African and worldwide assets, it's important that you backdate the financial immigration, because usually South Africans that immigrated purchased property only after immigration. So you don't want to pay CGT on property that you bought after immigration. Otherwise, you're going to pay CGT in South Africa on those as well.
Okay, yeah, I know it makes a lot of sense. And I'm really happy that you because I was kind of winding down to end the episode, but I'm really happy that you mentioned two very important points, and it's the fixed property and also the backdating. That is a very important thing, and that's something that I believe most expats will, or at least the expats that are already abroad at the moment, will make use of going forward. So that is very, very important to mention. But then, yeah, we have to say goodbye at some point. But just before we do, Danelle, your contact details. Where I know that I'm going to put your calendar in the show notes, where somebody can then click on the calendar and make an appointment with you directly. And there's an email that person will then receive automatically that will say that will give a little bit of details around the fees and all of that. But other than the calendar link that I'm going to share, where can people get hold of you?
So they are able to send me an email on finimmigration@ffgeer.co.za.
Okay, I'm going to record all of that in the show notes for those who want to refer to there. And then from my end, I'm done. I think there's still so many other questions, but that can be discussed on a one-to-one basis when future clients do get in contact with you, and there might be some more questions from their end as well. There's always questions around this topic. I mean, you can, yeah, especially for us that's not specialists, you know, for yourself it's pretty black and white. For us, we try and be try and be as biased as possible towards our own situations. So the conversation always kind of gets spun into a different direction. But let's leave it at this, unless there's anything specifically that you wanted to add to what you've already said. Yeah, otherwise we can greet at this point.
No, nothing from my side. Thanks for everything, Edwin. Thank you for giving me the chance to speak to everyone out there.
Awesome, Danelle. Thank you very much for your time. And I'm hoping that you can help a lot of our listeners. And for the listener out there, get in contact with Danelle. Look in the show notes. We'll have the contact details there, the calendar there, the email, and as well as the number. Thank you, Danelle. Have a lovely day. And I hope to speak to you soon.
Thanks, Edwin. You too.